The coast was gray. Not the gray of stone or cloud or distant rain, the gray of something that had been burned and had never grown back. The sky the color of old bone. Air still, tasting of nothing. Kale stood at the rail, her palm pressed to her sternum. Two notes braided there now, warm and patient and heavier than they had been a week ago, heavier, she thought, because she knew what they were for. The song of binding was not a thing she carried. It was a thing that carried her, and it was bringing her to the place where the hollow things walked. The tide kind moved under her. The water against the hull made no sound. That was the first thing she had noticed. When the gray shore had appeared on the horizon at dawn, there was no water lap, no creak of the rigging, no cry of gulls. Through a world that had forgotten how to make noise, it moved. Thrall stood at the bow. He had not moved since the coast appeared. His hands on the rail were gray and still, and she could not read his back, the set of his shoulders, the tilt of his head. But she knew, in the way the braided notes knew, that he had not crossed into the silence's own country in 800 years. Varen was at the stern. He was supposed to be checking the lashed stores. Instead, he was watching the horizon behind them, where the white wall of the fog had been. It was not there anymore. The fog had moved in the night, not drifted, not dispersed. It had contracted, pulling itself together like a muscle tightening, and it was ahead of them now. They were sailing into it. Her palm pressed harder against her chest. The two notes answered, a low vibration, steady, sure, and she stepped off the ship before it had fully beached, her boots sinking into ash that swallowed every sound. Kale's boots sank ankle-deep into the ash. She had expected sand, of course, dry, the way the Dales riverbeds were in summer. This was not sand. It was ash, fine and cold, the color of an extinguished hearth, and it made no sound under her weight. The shore should have crunched. It did not. The ash simply accepted her footfalls and held them, silent as a held breath. She turned. The tide kind sat at anchor in the gray water, her lines hanging slack. Valani stood at the rail, watching her. The distance between them was 30 feet of ash beach, and even that felt like too much. It was the first time Kale had been alone since the island, the first time she had been out of Valani's sight since the cave. Her hand rose, not a wave, a signal. I'm here. I'm fine. Valani raised her hand back. She did not smile. Thrall came ashore next. He moved differently on the ash, his bare feet found the ground with the same deliberate precision as always, but something in his posture had changed. His shoulders were higher. His head was turning, not searching, just registering, the way a deer registers the shape of a predator it has only ever smelled. He stopped beside Kale.
It is thinner here,
he said. His voice was quiet, and in the silence of the shore it sounded like a stone dropped into still water.
The deep song. The stone beneath us has forgotten how to sing.
Kale felt for it. The song of binding was there, warm in her chest, the two notes braided, but when she reached down through her feet, into the ground, she found nothing. No answering vibration. No deep warmth. The stone was dead under the ash.
How far does it go?
She asked. Thrall looked inland. The ash desert stretched before them, pale dunes, the bones of trees that had died standing, the faint silhouette of a ridge in the distance. No movement. No birds. No insect hum. The silence had taken every sound.
As far as I have heard,
he said.
And farther than I have walked.
Valani came down the gangplank, a pack over one shoulder, her cutlass at her hip. Melon followed, his tablet tucked under his arm, his eyes wide and taking in everything. Varen came last. He carried no pack, nothing at all. He walked down the gangplank with his hands empty and his eyes on the horizon. Kale saw that he was listening to the silence the way she had listened to the song, with the whole body, waiting for a sound that did not come. The party stood on the dead shore. No one spoke. The silence was not empty, it was full, a pressure against the ears, the way the air feels before a thunderstorm. Kale pressed her palm to her sternum and felt the two notes braided there. She thought about the hollow man who had killed her father, walking somewhere in this silence, walking for 17 years without stopping.
"We find the trail,"
she said.
"And we follow it."
No one argued. There was nothing to argue about. They had come here for this. Varen knelt and touched the ash. He brought his fingers to his face, rubbed the ash between them, and his expression did not change. Not a priest anymore. Not anything anymore. Just a man who had followed a memory keeper to the edge of the world and found that the edge was real. Thrall was already walking inland, his bare feet leaving prints in the ash that looked ancient, as if they had been there for centuries. The party followed. They walked for an hour before they found the first sign. The ash desert was not a desert in the way Kale understood deserts. There was no heat shimmer, no wind-rippled dunes, no sound of sand shifting. Ash lay dead and still, and the only movement was the party's own feet disturbing it, and even that felt like a violation, as if the desert should not be touched. A footprint was the first sign. Varen found it. He had taken the lead without announcing it, moving ahead of the group with the same hunting precision he had used in the alleys of Thren, and he stopped at a shallow depression in the ash and knelt.
"It doesn't match a human gait,"
he said. No one asked how he knew. He had been trained to track memory keepers across every terrain in Aethra.
"The stride is too wide. The weight distribution is wrong. Whoever made this was putting more pressure on the ball of the foot than the heel. Like they were walking on their toes."
He touched the edge of the print. His fingers lingered.
"It's warm."
Kale knelt beside him. The ash in the print was not cold like the ground around it. There was a residual heat, faint but unmistakable, the way a fire pit stays warm for hours after the flames die.
"How recent?"
she asked. Varen looked at the horizon. The trail led inland, toward the ridge she had seen from the shore, a darker line against the pale sky.
"An hour. Maybe less."
Kale felt the song of binding stir in her chest, not a warning, not a call, just an awareness. The man who had killed her father had passed through this place within the hour, walking on the toes of something that used to be a man, leaving footprints that were still warm in the ash. She stood.
"We move faster."
They walked. The ridge took them 2 hours to reach, and from its crest she saw what the desert held. A village in the valley below, not burned, not destroyed, but abandoned, the doors open, the roofs intact, the silence settled over it like snow after the last footstep has passed. The trail led through the village. Kale started down the slope, and the party followed, and the only sound in the world was the whisper of ash under their feet, and the distant, patient pressure of the silence, waiting ahead of them. The village appeared suddenly, a sprawl of low stone houses spilling down the far side of the ridge, smoke-blackened chimneys standing against a sky the color of old paper. Kale stopped at the crest and looked down at it. The ash desert stretched beyond, pale and endless. But here at the ridge's edge, the land had held on to something, thin soil, the bones of fences, the shape of fields that had been worked until recently. Nothing had reached her since the ridge's crest. No sound carried up from the village. No voices, no dogs, no hammer on iron. The silence that had pressed against her ears on the shore was no louder here, but it was denser, as if the village had been holding its breath for a long time and would never exhale. The trail led down into it, the hollow man's footprints, too wide, the stride of something that did not tire, passing through the village's main street without deviating. He had walked straight through. He had not stopped. Kale started down the slope. Valani fell in beside her, one hand resting on her cutlass hilt, the motion habitual rather than alert. There was nothing to be alert against. The village did not threaten. The village was simply gone. They passed the first house. Its door was open, swinging slightly on its hinges in a wind that Kale could not feel on her skin. She stepped past it and looked inside. A hearth, cold. A table with a bowl of grain still on it, the surface undisturbed. A chair pulled back as if someone had risen from it and meant to return in a moment. The grain had not rotted. The fire had not burned down, it had been stopped, as though the warmth had been removed from it, leaving only the shape of cold stones. Kale pressed her palm to her sternum. In her chest, the song of binding waited. She reached down through her feet, into the ground beneath the village, and found nothing. Not the thin deadness she had felt on the shore. This was not absence. This was removal. The silence had passed through this place and taken not the buildings, the walls, the roofs. It had taken the memory of the people. The stones remembered nothing. What remained was a shell that looked like a village, a skull where a face had been. This is what it does. Not to the bodies. To what the bodies carried. Melon stopped in the street, his tablet open, his pen hovering. He was not writing. His eyes were on the houses, his mouth slightly open, and for the first time since Kale had known him, he had nothing to say. The bandage was off his head, had been off since the island, and in the gray light of the ash desert afternoon his scar was a pale line across his temple, the only color in the street. He looked at Kale. His eyes asked a question his mouth could not form. She shook her head. I don't know either. Valani moved past her, checking the houses with the efficient precision of someone who had cleared rooms before. She did not call out. There was no need, the doors were open, the interiors empty, and the silence in each one was identical to the silence in the street. She came back and stood beside Kale, close enough that their shoulders almost touched.
Not the buildings.
She touched the bowl of grain.
The people. This is a meal that was being prepared. Someone walked away from it mid-sentence and never came back.
Kale nodded. She had seen it. She could not stop seeing it, the chair pulled back, the bowl half-measured, the fire that had not burned out but had simply lost its warmth. Varen had stopped at the doorway of a house near the end of the street. He had not entered. He stood at the threshold, his hands at his sides, his back to the party. Kale watched him for a long moment. She could not see his face, but she could read the set of his shoulders, the way he had gone still, the way his head was tilted slightly down. He was listening for something that should have been there and was not. She walked toward him. The ash under her boots made no sound. She stopped a few paces behind him and did not speak. After a long silence, he said,
"They told us it was a natural phenomenon."
His voice was flat, empty, the voice of a man reciting a fact that no longer meant anything.
"A zone of diminished song. A cyclical regression of the deep note. A product of geological exhaustion."
He listed them the way a priest recites doctrine by rote, each phrase a stone laid down, building nothing.
I memorized all the explanations. I taught them. I defended them.
He stepped through the doorway. Inside, a hearth, cold. A single chair by the window, facing the street. A cup on the floor, fallen, the liquid it had held long since dried into a stain on the stone. Varen knelt beside the hearth and touched the stones. His fingers traced the edge of the firebox, the place where the heat had been, where the warmth had been taken out of the world without ever having been aflame.
17 people lived here,
he said.
I counted the beds.
He did not look up.
They walked out of their houses one morning and forgot to come back. They did not die. They did not flee. They simply stopped being here.
His hand pressed flat against the cold hearth.
The silence does not kill. It dissolves. And I was trained to tell people that it is a weather pattern.
Kale stood in the doorway. She wanted to say something, that he could not have known, that the priesthood had lied to him too, that the man who had taught him the doctrine had believed it himself. All of that was true and none of it mattered. Varen knew. He had known since Vorn, since the cave, since the confession on the island. What he was learning now, in the cold hearth of a village that had been erased, was the size of the lie. Not that it was wrong, but that it had been wrong for so long that the world had forgotten what right looked like. She said nothing. She stood in the doorway and let him feel it. After a long time, Varen stood. He did not brush the ash from his knees. He walked past her, out of the house, into the street where the others waited. He did not look back. The party left the village without a word. The trail continued, the hollow man's two wide footprints, leading out of the village and into the deeper desert. There the ash was thicker, the silence deeper, and the sky the color of old bones stretched to every horizon. Kale walked at the head of the column, her palm pressed to her sternum. The song of binding hummed under her hand, and a coldness that had nothing to do with the desert settled through her chest. Not a single sound from the village in the last hour, not her own footsteps, not her own breath. Only the song in her chest, carrying the only warmth for miles. They walked until the sky turned the color of ash, a pale gray that faded into darkness without the intervention of sunset, as if the day had simply decided to stop being day. There was no dusk in the ash desert. There was light, and then there was dark, and the space between them was a matter of degrees, not minutes. Kale called a halt at the base of a low escarpment, not shelter, exactly, but a wall of wind-scoured stone that broke the horizon enough to feel like cover. The party settled without discussion. Melon dropped his pack and sat heavily, his legs folded under him. He pulled out his tablet and began to write by touch, his pen moving across the page in the dark. He had learned to read without light. Thrall sat apart, cross-legged on the ash, his hands resting on his knees. His eyes stayed open. He listened, the way he had listened from the bow of the tide kind when the coast first appeared. No one built a fire. There was nothing to burn and no one to see the flame, but no one suggested it. The dark of the ash desert was not the dark of a moonless night, it was a full dark, a darkness that had weight and presence, and the idea of adding light to it felt like an invitation. Kale sat apart from the others. Her back against the stone of the escarpment, her hands pressed together in her lap, her eyes on the darkness where the ridge had been. The song of binding hummed under her palms, the first note and the second, braided, warm, patient, but it was different here. In the cave on the island, the song had felt alive, responsive, eager. In the ash desert, it felt like a bell that had been muffled. It was there. It was humming. But the note was compressed, flattened, as if the air itself was pressing against her chest from the inside. She tested it. She let the two notes separate, let them hum against each other in the space behind her sternum. The resistance was there, a pressure, subtle but unmistakable, heavier than it had been at the shore. Desert and song pressed against each other, and the strain between them was a physical thing, a tension she could feel in her throat, behind her eyes, in the ache of her palms pressed together. A footstep on the ash. Not a sound, the ash made no sound, but the displacement of air, a presence approaching from her left. Valani sat down beside her. She did not speak. She held out her hand, not a gesture of reach, but of offering. In her palm was a waterskin. Kale took it. The leather was warm from Valani's body, and she held it for a moment before drinking, feeling the transfer of heat, the small edible warmth of a living thing in a dead place. She drank. The water was flat, the way water was when it had been carried too long. But it was wet, and it was hers, and she held it in her mouth before swallowing, letting her body remember what moisture felt like. The empty skin passed back to Valani, who took it and did not move away. She sat beside Kale, their shoulders almost touching, and she did not fill the silence, she simply occupied it, solid and present, the way she occupied a ship's deck or a city street.
Valani.
Kale said, after a long silence.
Amem.
The song is different here.
Valani did not answer immediately. She was looking up at the sky, at the stars that had come out in the darkness, the same stars Kale had seen from the dales. They had never looked so distant. The constellations were the same. The light was the same. But the distance, the space between her and them, felt immeasurable, as if the ash desert had expanded the world and left her smaller in it.
Different how?
Valani said.
Harder to hold.
Kale pressed her palms together.
Like it's pushing against something. Or something is pushing against it.
Valani was quiet for a long moment. Then she said,
Is that going to matter when you find him?
Kale closed her eyes. The question was precise, practical, the kind of question Valani asked, not a comfort, a clarification. Will you be able to do what you came here to do?
I don't know.
She said.
I think the song is the thing that matters. Not the desert, not the silence. The song is what I came here with, and it's what I'll use when I find him. And I think...
She stopped. The words felt too large for the dark.
I think it will work. Because it has to.
Valani turned her head slightly. Kale could feel her looking at her, not at her face, but at the shape of her in the dark, the line of her shoulders, the angle of her hands pressed together.
You know that's not an answer.
She pressed her palm flat against the ash beside her.
I know.
A pause. Valani shifted, adjusting her weight on the ash, and her shoulder pressed against Kale's. Neither of them moved away.
Then I'll say it for you.
Valani said.
You're going to find him. You're going to sing. And whatever happens after that, I'll be right behind you.
Kale opened her eyes. The stars were still there, distant, cold, the same stars she had grown up under in a world that had not yet learned it was dying. She thought of her father, the last time she had stood beside him under these stars, the Dale's autumn sky, the cold air, the smell of frost on the rooftops. She had not known it would be the last time, or that the next time she walked under these stars she would be crossing a dead desert to find his killer.
Valani.
Amem.
Thank you for coming.
Valani snorted, a soft, tired sound, almost a laugh.
You say that like I had a choice.
You always have a choice.
Not about this.
She said it the way she said.
This is the course.
To her crew, flat, final, the matter settled.
Not about this.
They sat in silence for a long time, their shoulders touching, the stars wheeling slowly overhead. Kale could hear the others settling, Melon's pen scratching in the dark, Varen's breathing from somewhere to her right, slow and steady, the breath of a man who had stopped running. And she could hear Thrall humming, a single subsonic note, so low it was more vibration than sound, meant only for her. She felt it in her chest, answering the braided notes, a recognition that did not need words. I am here. I am listening. She pressed her palms together and felt the song of binding humming under her skin, muffled but alive. In the morning, the trail. In the morning, the hollow man. Would the song be strong enough? She did not know. Would she? She did not know that either. But she would trust it anyway. It was what she had. The second day began the same as the first, gray light, no horizon, the ash stretching in every direction under a sky that had not decided whether to be day or night. Kale woke before the others, her back against the cold stone, her hands still pressed together in her lap. The song of binding was there, humming at the same muffled frequency. She had not slept, not really, but she had rested, letting her body still while her mind circled the problem of the desert. Today, the trail was different. They found it again within an hour of leaving camp, the two wide footprints leading deeper into the ash. But the pattern had changed. On the first day, the tracks had been purposeful, a steady line from the shore inland, the stride of something that knew where it was going. Today, the tracks began to wander. Loops and backtracking. Long straight stretches that ended in sudden direction changes. Places where the footprints circled for what must have been hours, leaving a ring of compressed ash like a slow whirlpool in stone. Varen knelt at one of these circles, his fingers tracing the outermost edge. His expression had not changed since the village. He did not look at Kale when he spoke.
He stood here for a long time.
He said.
Hours. Walking in a circle, clockwise. Then he stopped and faced east. Then he walked out of the circle heading southwest.
Kale stood beside him, looking at the ring of footprints. The hollow man had been here, standing in this dead circle of ash, turning in the same direction for hours. He was not tracking anything. He was not following a path. He was forgetting, the last fragments of human movement bleeding out of him, leaving only the mechanical need to keep walking until something stopped him. She felt the song of binding stir in her chest. Not a warning. A recognition. He is not far now. They walked. The tracks grew more erratic as the morning wore on, sudden stops, places where the stride changed from walking to something longer and stranger. The hollow man had broken into a run, then stopped, confused, and walked in a different direction. Melon, who had been quiet since the village, began to annotate the patterns in his tablet, not speaking, just recording, his pen moving in short bursts between glances at the ash. Velani walked beside Kale. She did not speak either. The silence of the party had become a shared thing, a language they had all learned in the last day and a half. There was nothing to say that the footprints did not already say. It was mid-afternoon when the trail ended. Not faded. Not lost. Ended. The tracks led up a gentle slope of ashstone, a ridge that rose from the desert floor like the spine of a buried creature, and stopped at the crest. Kale climbed the last few steps alone. The party waited at the base, watching her. She crested the ridge and stopped breathing. Below, in the lee of the ridge, a farmstead. Roofless, wind-bitten, the walls half-collapsed into the yard. A well in the center of the yard, choked with dry earth, the bucket long since rotted to nothing. A barn whose roof had fallen in, the beams sticking up like ribs. The ash desert had not taken this place slowly, it had swallowed it, the ash drifting against the walls, filling the doorways, burying the fence lines. And in the yard, a figure. Motionless. With its back to the setting sun it stood, the same sun that was a pale disk through the ash haze, hanging low over the desert. The figure was human-shaped, but only approximately, the way a man-shaped hole in the ash would be human-shaped. The outline was right, but the edges were wrong. It did not move. It had not moved in a long time. The ash had drifted against its feet, burying them to the ankle. The hollow man had stopped. Here, the trail ended. Not because the farmstead had ever meant anything to him. No door stood open for him. No hearth had been tended. Nothing in the yard had been touched. The walking had simply run out of places to go. The end of the trail was not a destination. It was a collapse. Varen's voice came from behind her, low and certain, the hunter's assessment of terrain rather than a priest's reading of meaning.
He did not stop here. He could not go farther.
Kale stood on the ridge and looked down at the thing that had killed her father. She had prepared herself for many things, for a chase, for a fight, for a monster that would attack the moment it sensed her. Not for this. The figure, standing still in a ruined yard, facing nothing, waiting for nothing, the ash gathering around its feet as the sun sank behind it. She did not move. She could not. Behind her, she heard Valani's footsteps on the slope. Then Valani's voice, low and careful.
Is that him?
Yes.
Kale said. Her voice sounded like someone else's.
Is he?
I don't know.
She had been ready to hunt. She had not been ready to find him standing still, the ash drifting against his feet, waiting for someone to tell him what to do next. The party moved down the slope in silence. Valani took point, her cutlass loose in its sheath, her eyes fixed on the figure in the yard. Varen flanked left, his hand on his sword hilt, the movement automatic, the hunting precision of a man who had tracked memory keepers across every terrain in Aethra. Thrall held the rear, his head tilted, listening to something that was not sound. Melon stayed at the ridge crest, his tablet open but his hand still, watching. Kale walked at the center of the formation. She had not told the others to take positions. They had simply done it, the way a crew moves into familiar stations without orders. The figure in the yard did not move. It had not moved since she crested the ridge. Ash had drifted against its feet, and the sun had sunk lower behind it, casting its shadow long across the yard. They reached the edge of the ruined farmstead. The wall that faced the yard was half collapsed, the stones scattered inward, and Kale stepped through the gap without hesitation. The yard opened around her, the well in the center, the collapsed barn to her left, the figure 20 paces ahead, still facing away from her, still motionless. She stopped. Her hand rose to her sternum, pressing against the song of binding. The two notes braided under her palm, warm and steady, and she felt them respond to the presence in the yard, not with alarm, but with recognition. The song of binding knew what stood before her. It had known before she did. Her mouth opened to speak, she did not know what she would say, a name she did not know, a greeting, a question. But before she could form words, the figure moved. It turned. The movement was slow, without sound, the way ash shifts under a wind that does not blow. He turned to face her. Kale saw his face. Not a face. The memory of a face's features blurred and shifting, the way a face appears in a dream that fades the moment you wake. Two darker patches of shadow for eyes, not looking at her but directed toward her. A line that moved slightly for a mouth opening and closing without sound, as if it were trying to remember how to shape words. The skin was the color of old ash, fine and dry, moving over the bones beneath like dust over stone. A sound came from the hollow man. It was not speech. It was the echo of speech, the way a leaf remembers being green, the way a fire remembers being warm. A vibration that passed through the air between them, carrying not words but the shape of words, a question that had no syllables, a name that had been forgotten. Kale's hand pressed harder against her sternum. The song of binding answered, a low note that resonated in her chest, matching the hollow man's vibration. And in that resonance, she understood. This was the man who killed her father. She had imagined him 1,000 times. A monster. A shadow. A thing without a name that had crept into the rootstore cave in the Dales and taken her father's voice, his song, his life. She had imagined him with claws and hunger, a creature of pure malice, something she could face with rage and a blade. A different shape emerged through the resonance. She tried to keep the other shape, the claws, the hunger, the monster she had been hunting since the island. And she wanted to keep it. It was easier, the face she had built for the thing that took her father. The resonance would not let her. It did not argue or resist. It simply showed her what was there, patient as stone. And the monster image would not fit over the shape it revealed, would not cover it, would not hold, the way a stained cloth cannot hide a clean wall. The man beneath it had been a memory keeper. A man who had loved someone, a wife, a child, a companion, Kale did not know who. But she felt the shape of the love and the vibration, the way a note carries the memory of the instrument that played it. He had loved someone, and he could not save her. The song had come through him wrong, twisted by grief, by desperation, by the refusal to let go. The discord had unmade him. It had hollowed him from the inside, taking his face, his voice, his name, leaving only the shape of a man who walked and walked and could not stop. He had been walking for 17 years. 17. Kale was 19, her father had died when she was 9, 10 years gone, and the gap between the numbers was not an error. The resonance let her feel it, he had been hollow for 7 years before he ever reached the Dales. He had not come to her father as a monster. He had come as something already broken. One night in the rootstore cave, it had stopped long enough to take her father's voice, his song, his life. Thrall's voice came from behind her, low and certain backslash.
He was already hollow when he found your father. Already years gone.
The hollow man raised one hand. The movement was slow, deliberate, the way a very old or very tired person reaches for something they are not sure they can hold. His hand was not a hand, it was the memory of a hand, ash-colored, the fingers too long, the joints wrong, but it was reaching toward her, not in threat, not in hunger. In recognition. He knew her. Not her name, not her face, but the song she carried. The song of binding was the same song he had reached for, the same song that had unmade him. It had returned to find him still walking, still waiting, carried by a young woman who stood before him with her hand pressed to her chest. The question in his wordless vibration was not who are you, but is it over now? Kale's hand trembled against her sternum. This is not a monster. This is a singer who broke. This is what happens when the song is reached for in desperation. The thought did not arrive as words. It arrived as a coldness that had nothing to do with the desert. She did not draw a weapon. She did not step back. Hand pressed to the song of binding, She stood still and looked at the face that was not a face, at the reaching hand, at the hollow shape of a man who had loved someone and could not save her. She did not say it aloud. But the song of binding carried it, and the hollow man's vibration changed, a different shape, a different question. The hollow man's hand did not lower. It stayed extended, palm up, waiting. Varen had seen cankers before. Not this close. Never this close. But he had seen them from temple walls, from the safety of Valdris patrol lines. The silhouette against a burning building. The thing that shuffled where men walked. The shape that the priests in training were shown as proof that the song must be controlled. He had never seen one reach out its hand. At the edge of the farmstead yard he stood, his sword half-drawn, his feet planted in the ash. He was in position, flanking left, covering the angle that Kale could not see. The formation had come to him without thought, a hunter's body remembers how to stand still when the prey is near. He was ready to strike, to cover, to pull Kale back if the hollow man moved. The hollow man had moved. It had turned. It had raised its hand. And Kale had not moved. Her weapon undrawn, she stood 20 paces from the figure, her hand pressed to her chest. She was not attacking. She was not retreating. She was meeting the hollow man's reaching hand with the stillness of someone who had come here not to fight, but to receive. Varen's sword hand trembled.
This is a canker.
He had learned about cankers before he learned to read. The Catechism of Loss, Chapter 4, the song touched who fall become hollow vessels. They cannot be saved. They must be contained or ended. To hesitate is to become complicit in their spread. At his ordination, he had recited that passage. He had believed it with the same certainty that he believed the ground would hold his weight. And now, 20 paces from a canker that had been hollow for 17 years, he watched it reach out its hand, as if it remembered what it meant to ask for help. Kale stood still before it, meeting its reach with her own stillness. The catechism did not prepare him for this.
The song touched who fall become hollow vessels.
This vessel was reaching out.
They cannot be saved.
This vessel was waiting for someone to prove that wrong.
They must be contained or ended.
And Varen, who had spent the last year watching Kale prove that every doctrine he had been raised on was a lie, watched her stand before the hollow thing she had crossed a desert to find. He understood, in his chest, not his mind, that she had not come here to end it. She had come here to hear it. The word apostasy flickered through his thoughts, a reflex, the ghost of a belief he no longer held. He pushed it aside and forced his hand to relax on the sword hilt. I will not run from this. He completed the thought, and the thought surprised him with its clarity. I will not run from what I have seen. Not from the empty village. Not from the cold hearth. Not from this reaching hand. The sword came down, not sheathed, but lowered. He let the tip touch the ash. The catechism said never to ground a blessed blade, it invited corruption. It rested there a long moment before he raised it again. He took a breath. He stayed. Kale closed her eyes. The hollow man stood before her. His ash-gray hand extended, his face that was not a face turned toward her. The song of binding hummed under her palm, warm and steady. She felt the weight of everything that had brought her here, the years of silence, the flight from the dales, the cave on the island, the memory of her father's hand going slack in the cold. All of it had been leading to this moment. The only way through it was to let go of everything she had been carrying. She opened her chest. Not metaphorically. It rose from her sternum, not as a sound from her throat, but as a release from the place where the two notes had been braided. The first note, awareness of the connection. The second note, the knowledge of what her song was. They separated as they rose, the braid loosening, and Kale felt the space between them fill with something that was not hers. Then the farmstead began to glow. That was what rose from the ground beneath Kale's feet, the green-gold phosphorescence of the memory cave moss. Not sunlight, the sun was still a pale disk behind the ash haze. It spread across the yard and climbed the ruined walls of the farmstead. The well stones held it. The collapsed barn caught it. Even the ash began to shimmer, the fine gray dust catching the glow and throwing it back. And at the center of the light, the hollow man changed. His ash coat began to fall. Not in pieces, in layers, the way a coat laid down at the end of a long day settles on a chair. The dust lifted from his shoulders, his arms, his chest, and beneath the falling ash there was a man. Gray. Tired. Almost gentle. His face was a face now, lined, old, the face of someone who had been walking too long and had finally been allowed to stop. The eyes that had been patches of shadow were real eyes now, pale and tired and full of something that might have been relief. His mouth, a line that had moved without sound for 17 years, shaped a word that did not reach Kale's ears. She did not need to hear it. He reached toward her not with a hand of ash but with a hand of bone and skin and old rope calluses, the hands of a memory keeper who had spent his life touching stone and listening for the song. His fingers brushed the air between them, and Kale felt the note that passed between them, a release that was not a dying but a returning. His eyes met hers. When his mouth moved again, she heard it, not with her ears, but with the song of binding, which carried the shape of the words before the sound reached her. Then the wind took him. Not a desert wind, this came from beneath the earth, from the place where the deep song still lived. It rose through the farmstead and took the hollow man apart the way a breeze takes a dandelion. His form scattered into light, not ash, not dust, but the green-gold phosphorescence of the memory cave. The light rose and spread and was gone, leaving only the empty yard, the ruined farmstead, and the silence that was no longer the silence. The glow faded. Green-gold died from the stones. Ash settled back into the yard. Kale stood alone in the empty yard. Hand pressed to her sternum, she felt the song of binding there, the two notes braided again, but it was different. It was louder. It was lower. It had dropped an octave, the vibration deeper now, as if it had consumed what the hollow man had been and made it part of itself. She felt the note resonate in her ribs, in her spine, in the bones of her skull. She had not killed him. And she had hurt him. The hearing had cost her something she could not name. Kale's knees buckled. She did not feel herself fall. One moment she was standing in the empty yard, her hand pressed to her sternum, feeling the changed song in her chest. The next moment the ground was rising toward her and she could not stop it. Her legs had become something that belonged to someone else, someone who had not just poured 17 years of a man's suffering into the earth through the medium of her own body. Valani caught her before she hit the ash. The arms that closed around her were familiar, shipsteady, reliable, the same arms that had hauled her out of the sea in the Wailing Strait, that had steadied her in the alleys of Thren. The ground rose to meet her, and Valani's hand found the back of her head, solid warmth between her and the cold ash.
"I've got you,"
Valani said.
"I've got you."
Kale's hands were trembling. She pressed them to her chest and felt the song of binding vibrating at its new frequency, deeper, heavier, a resonance that she had not chosen, that had chosen her. The green-gold glow was fading from the farmstead stones, from the ash, from the world. In its absence, the darkness was absolute, the kind of dark that had weight and pressure, a presence Kale had felt before. At the edge of the world, the silence had turned. She could feel it. Not as a sound. Not as a shape. As a change in the pressure, the way the air shifts before a storm changes direction. The silence had been a wall at the edge of hearing, a distant presence that Kale had been walking toward her whole life. Now the wall had a direction. The distance had a shape. It had felt the release, the song of binding used on the surface, in its own country, and it was turning toward them, vast and slow and certain as the tide. Kale tried to speak. Her throat was dry, and her voice came out as a whisper that Valani had to lean close to hear.
It knows me now.
Valani's arms tightened. She did not ask what Kale meant, she did not need to. She had felt it too, the change in the air, the pressure that had not been there before the singing. The world was different now. The party was no longer hunting. Something was hunting them.
We need to move,
Valani said. Her voice was flat, practical, the voice she used when a ship was taking on water.
Thrall, Varen, we need to move.
Thrall's footsteps came through the ash, his low hum, the same subsonic vibration he had sent her at the camp, but now it was urgent, a call to movement. Varen was moving past them, his boots making no sound on the ground, his voice low.
The darkness behind us, it's not natural. It's moving.
Forcing her eyes open, she found herself lying in the ash at the edge of the farmstead, Valani's arm behind her head, the ruined walls standing against a sky that had no stars. Varen was standing at the yard's entrance, facing the direction they had come from. He was not looking at something visible. He was looking at the darkness.
It's not advancing,
he said.
It does not need to.
Thrall stopped beside Kale. He did not look at her face, he looked at her chest, at the place where the song of binding hummed beneath her skin.
It heard you,
he said. Not a question. Kale nodded. She could not speak. Thrall looked at the darkness beyond the farmstead. His face was unreadable, the face of someone who had lived inside the silence for 800 years and had learned the shape of its attention.
We carry her,
he said.
We move. The desert is not safe anymore.
He bent and lifted Kale as if she weighed nothing, her back against his chest, his arms under her knees. Valani rose beside him, her cutlass drawn, her eyes scanning the darkness. The party moved into the dark. They walked through the night. There was no path. There was no trail. The tracks they had followed were behind them now, swallowed by the darkness that filled the farmstead and spread across the desert floor like water seeping through cloth. Varen led, his hand on his sword hilt, turning at intervals to check the darkness behind them. Valani flanked Kale and Thrall, her cutlass loose in her grip, her eyes fixed on the void that followed. It did not advance. It did not fall back. It simply was, a presence at the edge of sight that could not be looked at directly, the eye slid off it, the way the eye slides off a dark corner in an unfamiliar room. Varen walked backward for 100 yards, his sword drawn, not taking his eyes off the darkness behind them. It did not follow. It did not need to. It knew where they were. Melon's lantern guttered. He cupped his hand around it, shielding the light from the darkness, and the flame steadied, but Kale saw his hand shake as he lowered it. Still in Thrall's arms, she had stopped trembling, but her hands were cold, and her chest ached where the song of binding hummed its new, deeper note. She tried to reach for the song, to feel its shape, and found that the effort cost her something she did not have. The song was there. It was louder now. But using it, even the effort of touching it, was like trying to hold a conversation while the house around her was on fire. She murmured something. Only Thrall heard it.
It knows me now.
She let her head rest against his chest. The song hummed there, lower now, and for the first time since the farmstead she tried to reach for it properly, to feel its shape. The effort was like pressing on a bruise. It did not hurt, exactly. It simply refused to be touched. She let her hand fall. Thrall's arms tightened. He did not answer. He kept walking, his bare feet finding the ash with the same deliberate precision he had used on the shore. The party moved through the darkness like a ship through fog, the light from Melon's lantern the only point of reference in a world that had become featureless and vast. Dawn came without color. The sky did not lighten so much as gray. The darkness thinned to a pale ash tone, revealing the desert in fragments, a ridge here, a stone outcrop there, the distant suggestion of a horizon that had no edge. All night the party had walked without stopping. When Kale finally found the strength to speak, a single word.
Down.
Thrall lowered her to the ash. She stood on her own feet, swaying, her hands pressed to her chest. They had crested a ridge. It might have been an old road, the ground beneath the ash was harder here, packed, the line of it too straight to be natural. Kale stood at the highest point and looked back the way they had come. The farmstead was gone. Swallowed by distance and ash and the gray light that gave nothing back. She pressed her hands to her sternum. The song of binding hummed under her palms, quiet now, but not silent. It had settled into its new frequency, an octave lower than before. She could feel the weight of the hollow man in the note, not as a presence but as a layer, something added that could not be removed.
It knows me now.
She said. And for the first time, she understood the shape of what that meant. Not as a fear. As a fact, as certain as her own name. No one answered because there was nothing to say. The party stood on the ridge in the dawn of the ash desert, the silence around them heavy and full, and they all understood what Kale had done. She had used the song of binding on the surface, in the silence's own country, and the silence had felt it. Not as a distant vibration, as a touch, a direct contact that could not be mistaken for anything else. The silence knew her. It had heard her sing. And it would not forget. Kale looked south. The desert stretched in every direction, gray and endless. Somewhere beyond it was everything she had left behind, the dales, the echo node that had fallen silent the day she had left, the life she had thought she was leaving to save. She had come here to release her father's killer. She had done it. The Hollow Man was gone, returned to the Deep Song, freed from 17 years of walking. And the cost was that she could never hide again. The party stood on the ridge, and the silence was not empty, it was listening. Kale could feel it, the attention that had turned toward her, vast and patient and certain. This was not a hunter's attention. It was something older, a thing that had been looking for a long time and had finally found what it lost. The silence had not advanced. It did not need to. It knew where she was, and it would wait, because time meant nothing to a thing that had been absent for millennia. She pressed her hand harder against her chest. The song of binding hummed its new, deep note. I am not searching anymore. The silence is.